Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on this edition of Garden Talk. Glad to have you with us today. Our guest is Bob Tomesch, who is a senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at the UW-Madison at Extension. Bob, it's a pleasure to have you with us at the microphone again today.
It's always good to be back and just see what's going on around the state.
One of the on the last Garden Talk last week, a listener called in with a question about American chestnut trees. And this person lives near Reedsburg, which is about 55 miles northwest of Madison. There are mature chestnut trees in the school forest near Rock Springs, and each fall she collects nuts and sends most of them to the American Chestnut Foundation, have sent others to the Arboretum and then planted many of them. And she says it works best to overwinter the nuts in the refrigerator, packed in barely moist peat moss. By March, they begin to sprout and can be potted up to grow a while until they can be set out. The young trees need maximum protection from deer and rabbits and voles and mice because everything seems to like to eat them. And so the question I have for you is this just an isolated situation where she's in the right place and she's got the right location? Because it doesn't seem like everybody can do this kind of thing in the state.
Yep. We're at the northern range of chestnut growing, and there are a few pockets of isolation. They were basically wiped out back, I believe, in the 1930s to a fungal disease where there was constant populations. But we have a few isolated ones, so the disease never made it into Wisconsin. Okay, for collecting the seeds, she has good luck. There's two things that are necessary, whether you're collecting chestnuts or any of the acorns or black walnuts or hickories, is to collect the nuts, and you need to keep them in a moist environment and a chilled situation, usually below 39 degrees for about 90 days. And that'll force the hormones inside the seed to break down and germination will take place. So that's one issue. Some people take a seed like that, put it up on the shelf, and next spring plant it like they do their vegetable seeds and nothing happens. And that's part of it has to do with that chilling process. The other thing that does happen with nuts like that is if we have a short growing season, sometimes the meat inside or the cotyledons does not completely mature and the seeds will not germinate. We had a test plot even with some hazelnuts that came out of New York. And when we tried them in north central Wisconsin, we grew them out. The meat didn't even mature on a cooler summer, and none of them would even germinate because we suspected they needed about 140 days to mature, and we just don't have that in mm-hmm. most parts of Wisconsin. So with the chestnuts, collect them. Try either planting them directly back in the fall because once you plant them and start them outdoors, they have such a taproot, they're very difficult to move.
Thanks, Mimi, for your email on that. We appreciate hearing from you. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have a line open in Madison at 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. If my shrubs were severely girdled by mice last winter, is there any chance that I can save them?
Well, that's a real prominent problem this year because we had so much snow. If it wasn't the mice feeding on them for such a long period of time or the rabbits that have girdled that, with shrubbery, most times they are not grafted. And so if they're girdled all the way around the stem, they will leaf out. But they will die usually in the 1st of June. And part of it has to do with no sugars from the leaves are being sent back down through the bark to the root system to sustain that. So some choices you have would be to, one, you could cut them off to below wherever that girdling is, and they'll send up new suckers. You'll have a small statured plant for a couple of years, but that's something is a choice you have to make. The other option you have is to go to a local garden center or nursery and select some plants to replace those that have been girdled. But if you just leave them and they've been girdled all the way around, the same thing as with trees, they're going to die.
Let's go to the phones, take some calls. Joe in Chippewa Falls is first. Hello, Joe. What's on your mind today?
Hey, thanks, Jim, for taking my call. Hmm. Hey, Bob, I got a question about grass seed. I'm with the Wisconsin Renaissance Festival up in Chippewa Falls. Mm-hmm. And right now we're in the midst of constructing our campground. And we would like to spend the next, like this weekend, putting in grass seed, but I've been kind of told that it's almost too early because of this late weather we've been having.
Well, first of all, I would refer you to that question to John Steyer, who's our turf specialist, and he could give you some details. But as soon as the soil is ready to prepare, you could go ahead and do some seeding. We even do dormant seeding where we seed the turf areas in November as the soil is freezing up, and then you wait till spring, and then as the soil warms up, the seeds will germinate. So that's not an issue with the cool season grasses that we often grow here in Wisconsin.
Okay. Is there like a special, like a seed that would grow faster than others?
Well, when we start looking at different, not only cultivars, but different species, some will germinate very fast. For example, perennial ryegrass, with warm temperatures that we will probably start seeing, that'll be germinate within 10 days, sometimes even less. We look at Kentucky bluegrass, we're looking at 3 weeks. So it depends on what you're dealing with. Red fescues probably fall in that 3-week range for germination before you start greening.
Okay, that helps a lot for us there. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. Bob Tomesch is our guest. Our number is 263-1890 or 800-642-1234. And let's go next to Bonnie in Madison. Bonnie, what can we do for you?
Hi, Jim and Bob. Well, I have these tall, thin arborvitae-type trees in front of my house.
Yes.
And over the winter, the snow piled on top of some of the thinner ones so strongly that they were almost horizontal to the ground. And now one has sort of come up at a 45-degree angle, and I wonder if it will, you know, return to the perpendicular state, or how long should I wait, or should I cut it down?
How tall are these?
I would say they're very tall.
Okay.
This one is 10 or 15 feet at least.
Okay. Some choices you have to make, because sometimes they get too large for the location in the landscape where they're at. And so removing them, replacing them with a smaller statured plant is always a benefit. When they bend over like that, sometimes they will straighten up, or sometimes you may have to provide some type of staking to bring them into place. The only thing is they're going to be relatively weak-stemmed. Also check the ones that are leaning way over, did they actually break, or the stem, and then they're definitely not going to straighten up. So you probably have them close to the house where the snow off the roof has fallen on them, and actually probably was even ice. And so, one, you may have to stake. Two, you might want to just take a look at the situation and maybe consider replacing that with a properly statured plant.
Okay, thanks very much.
All right, Bonnie, thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you. And next is Carolyn in Loganville. Hello, Carolyn.
Good morning. I have a question about when you plant a garden. I've always heard that you shouldn't plant potatoes in the same spot each year, tomatoes, or you shouldn't plant certain vegetables next to each other. And I know I do potatoes, tomatoes, carrots, cucumbers, you know, the broccoli, the peppers, that type of thing. Do you have any advice on that?
Yes. The reason you shouldn't plant the same type of plant like potatoes in the same location is that if there are some diseases that were on the potatoes last year, many times those disease organisms will remain in the soil for 2 or 3 years. And so I often encourage people that have a larger garden to try to cluster the types of vegetables together. For example, all of your plants that relate to cabbage and broccoli and cauliflower, have that as one group. Another group would be the legumes. Another group possibly would be the potatoes and tomatoes and all that, and kind of have a rotation where you're not coming back to the same area with those tomatoes and peppers and potatoes for at least 4 years, and that'll help reduce some of that disease problem. The other thing is when you're tilling your garden, you almost have to till respectively, because if you till right through everything, what you're doing is taking some of the disease organisms that might be in the tomato area, they're sticking to the tines of the tiller, and you're carrying them over into a plot that did not have tomatoes, but in doing so, what you're doing is spreading the disease over to that. So it has to do with the disease situation that remaining in the soil for usually 3 years or so.
Okay. Any advice on whether certain things should not be planted next to each other?
No, I know. Every once in a while you read something, and I haven't really pursued that one.
Okay. I have one other question, if I can just squeeze that in. When you mentioned tomatoes, it reminded me that the last couple of years, my tomatoes start looking really good, and then after they blossom and start to develop the tomatoes, from the bottom up, the leaves seem to get a little bit spotted, yellow, and kind of dry up. Any reason why that should be happening and what I can do to avoid that?
Well, what you have is a disease organism. There are probably four or five that are common to tomatoes. It overwinters in the soil. And in the spring when you plant your tomatoes, usually at the time of a rain, some of those raindrops hit the soil, it splashes up on the leaves, and that's one way the disease starts. So what you should be doing is looking for disease-resistant varieties of tomato when you're looking, searching through the garden catalogs or going through a nursery where you're purchasing the material. That'll help a little bit. Some people put mulches down around the base of the plant right at the time of planting so that there's no splash up. But that doesn't mean that it can't fly in from your neighbor's tomato patch or something like that. Those spores travel a long ways. The other option that you can do is there are some garden sprays that are available that are fungicides, and it's a matter of applying right at the time of planting and then pursuing that on a weekly basis to protect those plants from the spores that would normally germinate on the leaves.
All right,
thanks very much. And there is a garden-related publication that you may be able to use, the Planting Guide for Our Region, which is ordered from University of Wisconsin Extension at learningstore.uwex.edu. And I believe it's A1653 is the number of the bulletin. That may have some information in there that all gardeners can make use of. Let's go to Rena next in Toma. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a grapevine that's covering my pergola, and it's I like it for shade, and it's last year did real well. But I wonder, should that be pruned back, or should I just let that run?
You should probably prune that back. Pruning grapevines or any of the fruit trees is an annual event. And if you leave it, what's going to happen is that it's going to get woodier and woodier and thicker. You probably have some disease problems setting in, depending on what variety that you do have. In the case of arbors and pergolas, there are some definite pruning strategies that should be done, where you try to train the trunk over the top of your trellis area, and then you want to save these fruiting canes. Those are the canes that grew last year, have buds on them, and try to spread that over the top of the arbor or the pergola, and that'll give you a nice cover each year. You should be removing on a grapevine about 70% of the plant material that's up there each season.
That's going to be fun, because the trunk goes all the way up about 8 feet. So.
Well, that sounds like ladder work to me.
Yeah, but like an Italian villa, you know, how pretty
yep.
they are.
Right.
But I did have many grapes. Of course, they were very tiny. But then I was starting to get a disease on them, this smut. I wonder if they could be sprayed so they wouldn't fruit.
No.
And, of course, they dry and they fall down all over everything.
Yeah. I don't know what type of disease there are. There's the powdery mildews and the downy mildews and the black spot are the three most prevalent diseases on grapes. All those diseases start in the spring, right as they begin to leaf out. So if you want to use a protection program, a fungicide, you do it then. Or there are some organic materials like Bordeaux mixture and some of those things that can be utilized. As for trying to knock the fruit down, we call those thinning agents. I haven't really seen one for grapes, except frost.
Rena, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate hearing from you. Our guest on Garden Talk is Bob Tomesch, senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at the UW-Madison and Extension, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcome to Garden Talk. I'm Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk with Bob Tomesch. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the lines are full at the moment. The number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, 800-642-1234. And we do entertain emails at talk@wpr.org. Back to the phones to Dennis in Wausau. Next, hello, Dennis.
Yes, I have two questions, if I may. One is, how do I stop moles from boring in my lawn?
Well, that's an aesthetic problem, and this winter was exceptionally long, so they've had plenty of time to burl. You're saying a vole, they're the ones that leave the trail on top of the lawn in the grass, right?
No, actually, kind of underneath.
Okay.
You can see them.
Okay, now we're talking moles and with the M-O-L-E.
Right.
Those tend to come in and feed, and they're carnivores, and they eat insects and grubs and things like that. Some options that you have would be, one, if you choose to use some of these lawn insecticides, that would reduce their food source, and they'd move on to the neighbors or out into the wooded areas. And that's where many of them tend to work most of the time anyway, but they will come out into the lawn to feed. There are different types of trapping devices that people have utilized to reduce the population. Once you find their main trail, there's a bulletin on mole control, again from the Learning Store, and you can get a copy of it through your county extension office, and it'll talk about some of the strategies to remove them. They may leave a lot of trail, but there's probably only about three or four out there.
I see.
And your other question, Dennis?
The other question is there any natural way of poisoning bugs on apple trees?
Well, when you're using a poison, you're using some type of insecticide. There are some approaches for insect control. One would be to bag the apples that you want to protect using a sandwich bag. If you do some internet searching, you can find that. Or if you get a hold of me, I can send you a handout that I often use where they take a sandwich bag, slide it over the apple when they're about the size of a dime, staple it on each side of the stem, and then the fruit develops inside that bag, and so any insects or disease that hits, they can't get in. You only eat about maybe 150 apples in a year. You can bag about 40 apples in an hour, so 4 hours, you're all done. As for other products that are out there, there are some that if you go to Gardens Alive or some of those types of nursery suppliers, they will have products like neem oil. They'll probably have something like horticultural oils. There's some clay-like material that you mix with water, and the insects don't like being in the vicinity of that clay because it irritates their connection. So some of those options are available. Some people try these sticky apples, the red ones or the yellow. You need about 4 apples per tree to have any impact on the insect population.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, Dennis, thanks very much. We appreciate hearing from you. Let's go to Dave in Evansville next. And Dave, what's on your mind?
I was interested in what's the best time of the year to transplant raspberries.
You should be out there right now. Are you taking from a plot that you already have?
Right. They're in the garden, and they're getting a little rowdy, so I filled a plot out in a hay field, and I'm going to put a strip of them.
Well, it sounds like you planned ahead. If you have it tilled up already, that means you've got the weeds controlled. Usually somebody says, I'm going to move these raspberries, and they look, well, it's over there in that lawn area or something like that. And the preparation is an important step to knock down the weeds that are there.
I'm a big believer in renting the sod cutter and getting them all out of there.
Yep. Okay, for transplanting, just a couple suggestions there. Now is a good time to do it if you're going to take plants out of your existing raspberry bed. If you can either take the existing cane that's there that have suckered out, that's left over from last year, cut it back to about 6-8 inches, dig down deep enough that you get some of not only the vertical root but the horizontal segment, and you need about 4 inches of that on either side of that upright cane. That means you'll have enough root absorption area. If you just take the vertical portion, many times they will not survive. So be generous in that part. Another thing you can do is when they start emerging the new suckers, you can take those out again, making sure that you dig deep enough that you get about 4 inches of horizontal root on either side of that stem. And those could be moved all the way up into probably the middle part of May or the near the end of May.
Yeah, because I want to take the whole works out and transplant them. And then strawberries also.
Strawberries, usually those are moved either now in the spring, and we really don't receive a crop off of those. Also, in the growing season, like in August or September, when those new runners develop and root, you can dig up those small daughter plants and set those. Again, when you set them that late, there's most likely not very much for flower buds, and so you'll miss a year of productivity, but the plants will be establishing themselves. There's two very good bulletins, one on growing raspberries in Wisconsin, another one on growing strawberries in Wisconsin that can provide you with some helpful management hints.
Okay.
All right, David, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Our number in Madison, 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234 on this edition of Garden Talk. Let's go to Joan in Milwaukee next. Hello, Joan.
Hi. I'm wondering if you can give me some tips about radically trimming a crabapple tree at this time of year.
Yes. Pruning is something we usually like to do during the dormant period. Or, as an old saying stated, when the knife is sharp, and that's probably where you're at right now. Okay, things to look at when you're in the training phase of the tree. You want to select some specific scaffold branches. Usually the first branch or two is what's comfortable around you. In other words, if you're mowing underneath it, you probably want it up there at a height of about, maybe 4 or 5 feet, so you can get underneath it. Then you want to save branches about every 8 to 15 inches spiraling around the tree. And then any branches that want to grow inward or straight vertical, I'd remove those as well.
And it's safe to radically do that at this time of the year?
Yes.
Okay.
And don't use any pruning compound. If you have never pruned the tree, I often tell people to pick out those branches, use a piece of tape or something like that, that you can mark the ones you want to save, and then you cut out the main branches that aren't marked, and that'll open up the tree. And for those that have apple trees like that, the culinary types of what you're going to eat, take out those scaffolds. Those main branches the first year. Next year, you want to come in and start re-thin the tree, take out all the water sprouts that you've developed. Thin out those that are growing vertical and horizontal. And when you're through, after about 3 years, you should be able to remember as a kid crawling up a tree how much fun it was on a tree that was easy to climb.
Yeah.
That's what you want to attain.
But this is an older tree. It's like 20 years old, and it's just grown every year. It just outgrows itself. So.
Yep, and that's characteristic of some rootstocks that are very, very prolific. Good luck.
All right, Joan. Thanks very much. Good luck to you. The number in Madison, 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 800-642-1234. On Garden Talk, let's go to Ann in Appleton next. Hello, Ann.
Good morning. My problem is rabbits and my raspberries. Yes, I did fence it in, but we had so much snow and ice that the rabbits just hopped over and absolutely nailed down everything. So that the raspberry stems are maybe an inch or 2 inches at most.
Situation like that, you're probably most likely not going to get a crop because they mowed them all the way down, but you'll have the new suckers coming and that'll replace or have fruit next year. Something to consider are some of the fall-bearing varieties that are out there, like Autumn Bliss, Autumn Britain. They'll start fruiting in August if you treat them properly, and those you have to cut all the way to the ground. So that you get the right hormonal balance so that they will be the most productive at the earliest phases in August. And they'll produce fruit for you all the way up into October. So something to consider. And if I were to choose, I'd have one fall-bearing type and one June-bearing type so that you have berries through a good portion of the summer. So you haven't lost anything. You just have lost your crop for this year. And you're not alone. I was out pruning at one of the research stations, our apple trees, and the snow was so deep that the first round of branches weren't even touched, but they're eating the tips off, and they were up in the second round of scaffold branches in some of those areas.
Well, I figured that you told me that I just lost my 30-year-old forsythia also, because it's completely girdled all the canes.
Yep, they like the fast-growing plants because they're the most tender. With your forsythia, just prune that thing back to the ground, and you'll have flowers next year.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you very much, Ann. Appreciate hearing from you. Mark in Duluth wonders, when is the best time of year to transplant rhubarb, and how does someone go about that transplant process?
Okay, yeah. That we're getting close to that. I had a program up in there, so your ground's still a little froze. I was up in Bayfield last week. But it's going to happen fast. As soon as, for moving rhubarb, either you would move it in the fall, usually in October, or you can move it now in the spring. But take a generous root portion or root segment if you're going to divide it up. Take a good healthy clump and don't plant it any deeper than it was before. Many times when people transplant rhubarb, they set it too deep and then it's really slow to develop the crown. When you're digging, you'll be able to see some little eyes that are starting to emerge. And so you want to do this as soon as the soil thaws. And that's going to happen any day now for you people up there. But then move it and just keep it weeded around and things should be okay.
All right. Bill in Eau Claire is next. Hello, Bill. What's on your mind this morning?
Hi. I've got small red ants throughout the lawn in late spring, throughout the summer, and they mound and create quite a problem throughout the lawn. I've tried two granular products. I think it was Bug Be Gone, another one containing 7, at twice the recommended rates, but I still cannot control them.
Well, that's a question, again, we should probably save for Phil, our entomologist, and he's usually on Thursdays, right?
He's
got a schedule. Okay.
He's not on schedule, and he's all over the map.
But anyway, there's different types of ants, and I'm not sure which one you have. There are some that feed regularly and some that carry the food back to their nests. And so the type of insect-controlling material that you use is dependent on the type of ant that you have. I guess in your situation, I would suggest going down to some of the, like a garden center or something like that, and they have actually control materials. And some of these are on, like, sugar products, and they'll carry them back down, and they'll take care of the brood. So I would search that out or just simply wait till Phil's on someday and give him a call.
All right, thank you.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. Sounds like a problem that's pretty persistent, and so we'll try to address it the next time Phil's on. Sharon in Shatek is next. Hello, Sharon.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. Bob, I've been to your seminars way back when you were at River Falls. I don't know if you're still there or not, but I'm up in Shatek in your home country, so I'll ask you some northern questions. Number one, we have planted some small yew bushes last fall. They're very sunburned, and we've covered them with burlap in a frame, and they're on the south side of a yellow house. Plan to move them, but can we save them from their sunburn?
Yes, if you look very carefully on those yew plants, and it's not sunburn, it's actually the winter burn. The leaves are green all winter, and with the severe cold and wind and everything else, they couldn't get enough moisture, so that's why they've browned out. But if you look very carefully, and you'll see some buds, and those buds, once they begin to grow, regreen that area. I would suggest if you're moving them, move them now to the location that you want. Let them establish themselves for a couple, 3 weeks, and then I would cheat a little bit by getting some fertilizer material for woody plant materials, some of those that go into solution, like the Miracle-Gro products and that. You mix the solution up and water them first with water. Next day come in with that fertilizer solution, and they'll green up a lot faster.
What side of the house?
They like the shadier side of the house if you're going to be planting yew.
Could they survive on the south side?
Yes, they will.
They will?
Yes, but you're going to see more browning out on the south side than you're going to see on the shadier side.
If you use winter protection like burlap, would that help?
They still lose a lot of moisture, okay, especially up in that area.
Okay. Another question, river birch. I've got two clumps, and I couldn't get to them this winter to prune them out, and so they've got those little scraggly branches. They're young, about 3-4 years old, maybe 5 years old, quite tall, about 20. Can I prune them now, or do I need to wait till next winter?
You could prune them now. What you're going to find is once you make the cut, they're going to weep. They happen to produce a lot of water. That's just the natural thing, and they'll dry back. Again, the best time to be pruning any tree is during the dormant period, but you could still get by doing it.
Okay. Okay, thanks so much.
All right, Sharon, thank you very much. The number for you, if you have a question or a comment about gardening, in Madison is 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. The email address talk@wpr.org. We're talking with Bob Tomesch, senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at the UW-Madison and Extension, no longer at River Falls. No longer at River Falls?
My tenure still resides up there. I've been down here for about 10 years because we're working with the Pyle Center, which was working with distance education. I've developed the Master Gardener training through that. And back before we did that, we would probably pick three counties a year, probably train 75 people. Now I can, I think this spring we probably trained about 600 people. And at 25 different counties, so those northern areas, any part of Wisconsin has access to the program.
And go through your county extension office?
The county extension office will host the program. We just finished up last Tuesday night. So I know what I'm doing Tuesday nights, probably until I retire between 6 and 9 o'clock.
Okay, back to the phones to Roman in Rice Lake. Hello, Roman.
Hi, good morning. I've got a 4-foot-high wood fence that's rather solid, and that runs across east to west, south of our boundary of our property. And I'd like to replace it with an arborvita hedge, but I'd like to start the hedge in the shade of that fence, pretty close to it. Will that work? Will the arborvita get going in the shade? I did one of these hedges before, up around Tomahawk, and it's now about 8 feet tall, and it's just a beautiful hedge, and it got going real well in about the second or third year. It was up about 3 feet. Would it work in the shade of this fence, though?
Yes, it would work in the shade of the fence. In fact, they even like it a little bit better in the shade when they're first getting started, because that leaf tissue is green all year round, and so a little bit of shading isn't going to hurt at all. So go ahead, plant it in there. If you put it on a good watering and fertilizing program, they'll grow a lot faster. And when it comes to, there's a good bulletin on fertilizing trees and shrubs available through your county extension office or the learning store. It'll tell you roughly about the amounts to apply. But plant the plants, give them a chance to establish themselves for about 3 weeks, and then move in with a fertilizer program. But do not fertilize after the 4th of July. Those plants should be thinking about getting ready for winter. If there's fertilizer there, they're thinking about growing. And the two don't mix on a bad winter.
Well, I appreciate your help.
All right, Roman. Thanks very much for your call. And let's try Jerry in Wausau. Jerry, what can we do for you?
Yes, I have a 36-inch to 40-inch oak stump cut down at ground level. I got it from a storm last fall where I lost my oak tree. And I got a little ambitious and carved out a 30-inch square, about 4 inches deep in the stump that me and my wife would like to throw some topsoil in and plant some perennial creeping plants. And we're wondering if there's anything that would work for that. It's a very sunny location, and that's really about it. I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, some of the phlox would be a possibility in that location. Even looking at some of the, not dealing with perennials, but some of the annuals. For example, the wave petunia would be an excellent plant that would tend to spread itself over that area. So look at some of those that tend to spread along the ground region. Something to consider, I know you've carved out a deep hole into there, but that might trap water. And so in order to avoid that, you might want to take a long drill bit and try to work your way out in a couple of places. And just so that you get some water drainage out of there if it is trapping water. Put some water in. If it disappears, that means you've got a crack there. You don't have to worry about it. But you could flood things out.
I understand. Yeah, it'd be just like pouring water into a pot then.
And the other thing that happens when you put soil in there and get things going, what you're doing is feeding a lot of good bacteria, and they're helping break down that stump, even though an oak stump may be there for a while. But the rate will be a lot faster.
Jerry, good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. And let's go to Tom in Janesville next. Hello, Tom.
Well, hi. Interestingly enough, I have a question that's kind of the opposite of the caller before your last one. I have a row of mature arborvitae, very tall arborvitae, bordering my yard and my neighbor's yard. They actually belong to my neighbor. And I have need to put a fence up, and I need to trim prune the bottom branches up to about 4 feet. Now, I've already okayed that with my neighbor, but I just want to make sure that I don't damage the trees permanently when I pretty much shave most of the branches from the ground up to about 4 feet.
How tall are those arborvitae?
20, 25 feet.
Okay.
They're very old.
Yep, so they're actually trees then. They're not the columnar landscape thing.
Right.
Doing the pruning, of course, with any pruning, we should have done it when it was dormant, which is the proper time. But when you're going to cut those branches, take a little bit of care. If you look very carefully, right when they come out of the tree, there's kind of a little set of rings, and you want to be on the outside of those rings if you see those. That's a natural healing point for doing the pruning. But they should be able to handle the pruning.
All right, excellent. Thank you.
All right, Tom. Thank you very much. And our guest today, Bob Tomisch, senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at the UW-Madison and Extension. And we're on Garden Talk. If you'd like to join in, the number in Madison, 263-1890. Otherwise, toll free at 800-642-1234. Leanne in Madison is next. Hello, Leanne. Hello, Leanne. We're having difficulty with your telephone. I'm sorry, you'll have to get that phone straightened out before we're able to understand you. David and Merrill, let's give you a chance. Hi.
Hi, yes. I have a small lilac bush, and I'm wondering what I should be doing this time of year for it, and when and how much should I prune it when it comes time to do that?
Okay, with lilacs, if it's a small stature, it probably doesn't need any pruning. But there is a pruning process for shrubbery, some that tend to be very prolific in their growth, like forsythia and some of those. With that, what you want to look at doing is removing about one-third of the old stems, and this should be done about every five to 8 years, where you take out one-third of the old stems, the next year you take out another third, and when you're doing that, there'll be new suckers coming up to replace the old. What happens on some trees or shrubs, when you're looking at pruning is if they stop flowering or really slow down and start looking raggy, then it's time to come in with a rejuvenation process. Otherwise, let them grow. If they're getting too large, then again come back in and have this three-year rejuvenation process where you're taking about one-third of the shrubs. There's also a very good extension bulletin on shrub maintenance through the Learning Story or local county extension office.
Okay, is that available online also?
Yes, it is. Go ahead, right. Jim.
At learningstore.uwex.edu, and you'll be able to find it there.
All right. Thank you.
David. Thanks very much. Appreciate hearing from you. This is Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on this edition of Garden Talk, perhaps our most popular show. And one reason is Bob Tomisch appears pretty frequently, senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at the UW-Madison. Again, Bob, thanks for being here today. Let's give Leanne another chance in Madison. Hello, Leanne.
Hi. Sorry about that.
Okay.
I planted a couple of bare root cherry trees last year, and we planted them at or maybe just a slight bit below the graft point, and we're concerned that we might need to actually pull them up and replant them this year if we planted them too deeply.
Yeah, it sounds like you planted them too deeply. Usually when you're replanting any fruit tree or landscape tree, plant them at the depth that they were planted in the nursery. And I know that usually the graft union is sometimes anywhere from 4 to maybe 10 inches above the root zone. So
okay.
You're definitely too deep. I would dig the hills back up and replant them. Those flare of roots should only be about an inch below the soil.
Oh, wow. And is it a good time to do that now? Should we do it right away or wait till the fall?
I would do it right away because that tree is going to die being that deep in the ground.
Okay. And then I had one other question, actually. We dug up about a 50-year yew bush. It was huge and had really extensive roots. And when we pulled it up, we couldn't quite get all of the roots. But it's in a really sunny location, so we want to plant a vegetable garden there. And I know that yew bushes do have some toxins in them, so I was concerned if having vegetables that we're going to eat over yew roots, if that would be a problem.
I'm pretty sure that won't be a problem.
Right.
With the yew, the toxin has to do with the berry, and that's only, they come in male and female plants. And if you saw red berries on it, usually in the fall, that's the female, and that's where the toxin originates.
Excellent. Oh, no, I think it was a male then.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks for your help.
All right, Leanne, thank you very much. And let's go to Lou in Appleton next. Hello, Lou.
Hello, how you doing? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Certainly.
I have a question for Bob. When I retired, a good friend of mine gave me one amaryllis plant, a beautiful amaryllis plant that his mother had actually nurtured and had started to grow several years ago. And for the first 2 years, this was 5 years ago, for the first 2 years, the plant just had a beautiful, would bloom beautifully in the early spring. And the last 2 years, we've done what we were told to do, to cut it back and then put it in a closet with no light and then bring it out, you know, in the spring. For the last 2 years, we've had beautiful green leaves, but absolutely no blossoms. And I'm wondering if there's something that we did wrong. I know my wife did separate the bulb into two because it was getting so large. And but we did have it bloom 1 year after that. And I'm wondering if Mr. Tomich has any suggestions.
Well, I'm not a real expert on that, but I can tell you a couple of things. Is one, when you're growing it from the bulb and it greens up and all that through that, if it gets a little bit dry, sometimes the flower bud, which is actually the very tip of that bulb down inside, sometimes will dry up and abort. So watering, that might be a possibility. I would try to do a little internet search or go down to the library and do a little digging on just care of amaryllis. I think it has to do probably more with the maintenance of something's going on, or even overwatering sometimes will cause some rots to start there. But I'm guessing that it just dried out too much when you were on vacation.
Okay, and there is no recourse now from the standpoint.
It'll regenerate a new flower each year.
Oh, it will. So we definitely shouldn't get rid of it then.
No, I would really just try to take a little better care of it during the growing. You know, you've been out fishing too long on the lake or something like that for too many weeks.
Correct.
And sometimes those potted plants dry out a little bit, and the leaf tissue survives, but the flower bud is probably the first to go because that's the last piece to get water.
Okay, well, I really appreciate the information, and thank you so much.
All right, Lou, thank you very much for your call. And if you'd like to join in, the number in Madison is 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. His comment about pots gave me a question. Is there a particular kind of pot, ceramic or some other kind of pot, that you prefer to work with if you had a choice?
If I had a choice, huh? Well, it depends on how much time you have to take care of your plants. The old clay pots were very favorites for growing a lot of stuff. They were durable, and you could clean those back up. But what the problem with clay pots is you probably have to water two or three times more frequently than you do with the new plastic or ceramic. The biggest thing with any pot is you want to have drainage on the bottom. Just if you took a tin can and planted a plant in there, you keep watering it, and the water would build up, and you'd end up with some root rot. So you want to punch some holes in the bottom even of a can. Some of the plastic materials are good. We find that if you use them from year to year, after a couple of years, sometimes we have some diseases that might build up in those, especially when you're starting bedding plants. Mm-hmm. That might be an issue. But drainage is the key thing after that.
Anything goes.
They have a ratio that the plant above the pot should be no more than two times its volume. Otherwise, you need to move to a larger pot or a container. And as they get bigger, they're going to need more frequent watering.
All right, back to the phones, and we go to Cindy in Westby. Hello, Cindy.
Well, hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about some cranberry viburnum that I am transplanting. And they got pretty big. They put them in a spot to keep them safe from deer and other critters. And now they're really tall. They're probably about maybe seven foot tall. And I'm trying to dig them up, and they're growing kind of close to the house. And I'm having trouble digging them up. And I'm wondering if we wrench it out with the tractor, would that kill it?
Probably not.
Oh,
they're pretty tough. when you were talking about it, I mean, that isn't the best way to move stuff, because what you're doing is tearing a lot of the small roots. The other thing is when you take them out, if you're going to be abusive to them, you want to remove some of the major stems. But the proper way to remove or move plants is to take a generous root ball and move the whole thing over and all that. But I can see your frustration there, and you want to get the project done. Just take out some of the top shoot growth and...
You mean I should lop off the top?
Lop them off right at the ground.
Lop them off at the ground?
Yeah, they'll send up new shoots. That's a shrub. And it'll take you about 2 years, and you'll start having berries on them again.
Oh, okay. Thanks very much for your help, then.
I'm sure there's a few people that cringe when I, especially nursery people. And we're supposed to take, you know, a good generous ball and everything else. But I've moved things like that and probably been about as kind as she's suggesting, and I've still had success. The whole secret is that you don't want to leave too much top material as to the amount of root system that you have. You want to balance that out. And then you're probably giving up any fruiting on some of those shrubs for 2-3 years while they send up new shoots.
Cindy, good luck to you and your project. And let's go to Jill in Waukesha next. Hello, Jill.
Hey. I have a question about planting willow wands. First of all, I've planted a willow wand already, and it made a willow tree. But this is a different location. And I want to know, when can I cut off a willow wand and plant it now when it's having its little buds come out? Or should I wait till the fall when the willows are not, like, budding?
Do it right now.
I'll do it now. Okay.
Yep. And what you might want to do is some of those buds begin to grow is reduce a few of them on that willow wand. What you're doing is taking a stem, last year's growth probably, and placing it in the soil down about 8 inches or so, and the usually will root. If you get too much leaf tissue up above and there's no roots there, what happens is sometimes they just run out of water and they don't make it. So you want to remove some of the leaf tissue or buds from the bottom portion.
Okay, great. Yeah, this one should get plenty of water because we had a little pond when we had all that rain just recently. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's in a good spot. So, and I can cut a wand now.
Yep.
And it won't.
I would do it within the next week or two.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jill. Good luck to you. And let's try Jeremy in Caledonia. Hello, Jeremy.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
The reason I was calling is I'm purchasing my first home, and the current landscaping leaves quite a bit to be desired. It's pretty rough around the edges, or all the way through, actually. And I'm basically going to be starting from scratch. And I was wondering if you could recommend a good resource on plants native to Wisconsin and the care for them. As well as pictures of these plants so that I can kind of get an idea of what I wanted to put into my landscape. In addition to that, I was also looking for a resource on pruning because I'm going to look at trying to salvage a couple of the bushes that are there.
Well, I would go visit the Learning Store right away because there are a number of bulletins that are available through that. And then a choice you're making is, am I going to use native plant materials or am I going to use certain cultured cultivars? And that's a choice that you make for your yard. But in terms of saving those plant materials, there's some good bulletins on rejuvenation and pruning. As for plant materials, there's selecting plants, landscape plants for Wisconsin. That'll give you a fairly good list of what cultivated selections are. When it comes to pictures, you might have to go on the internet. Minnesota has a disc available, I believe, on nursery plant materials, or even some of the Arborist Association and Landscapes Association sometimes will have a CD disc that you can put into your computer, and it'll show you pictures of some of these different types of shrubs.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck to you,
Jeremy. That'll help me out quite a bit. I'm kind of a novice in this area, and I'm hoping to get some good ideas. So thank you very much.
All right.
With anybody at your stage, I would suggest doing a little bit of homework. Get as much reading material under the belt as you can.
Jeremy, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. And on to Don in Door County. Hello, Don.
Hello.
Yes,
hello.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I'm on my way home from Door County back to Tacoma. I'm getting ready to till my garden. I've already cleared off my asparagus patch, but my garden gets very prolific with purslane and pigweed. It just turns green once the warm weather comes. Can I prepare that after I till it with the preen-type products before I set out my cold crops?
Well, you have to be a little bit careful with preen because what preen does is prevent root development. And sometimes when you put preen on and you seed into it, your plants won't germinate. Or they'll germinate, but they won't root.
Okay, these are already started.
If these are transplants, then if you look on the preen label, it'll suggest the amount to apply and when to apply around transplants like your cold crops.
Okay.
The other thing I found with Preen and some of the other products is sometimes you will have carryover into next year.
All right. Well, that wouldn't be bad either. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Don, thank you very much. I want to mention something that's coming up in Milwaukee. Sharon Morrissey, the consumer horticulture agent for Milwaukee County, is going to be teaching a course at the UWM School of Continuing Education on natural landscaping and yard care on April 22nd. That's a Tuesday, next Tuesday. And you can get more information by emailing her, Sharon.Morrissey, M-O-R-R-I-S-E-Y, at ces.uwex.edu, or if you don't have email access, why, you can call her at 414-290-2412. These are taught through the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee School of Continuing Education. Her next one on the 22nd on natural landscaping and yard care. It should be beneficial if you're down there and can make that. We're going to take time out to catch up on the latest news. We'll come back and we'll take more of your calls and talk with Bob Tomesch. The number in Madison is 263-1890. Or toll-free at 800-642-1234. I'm Jim Packard, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk, and we're pleased to have Bob Tomesch, a senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at the UW-Madison and Extension with us. Bob, again, thanks for being here today.
It's always a pleasure.
It is a pleasure for us as well. Let's go back to the phones, and the lines are full, but let me give you the numbers in Madison, 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 800-642-1234. And we're going to lead with Mike in Middleton. Hello, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question with rhubarb. I've had problems. I've got some plants, and I'm not sure what the variety is, but they seem to bolt extremely soon in the season and don't get much production out of them. I'm wondering if it's a stress or if it's possibly a variety that's not suited to the area.
Rhubarb, we call it bolting. What it's doing is sending up its flower stalk. And what usually is done, as soon as you see that flower stalk begin to emerge, just remove it out all the way down as deep into the crown as you can get without damaging the crown. The rhubarb plant does this. It's a photoperiodic response. And it's when you remove that flower stalk, then all the energy is put back into vegetative growth, and so you can continue harvesting some of the petioles for consumption. So it's just a normal characteristic. Some varieties are more prone to bolt than others, and sometimes it's an age factor or stress factor that forces them to go one way or another. But just removing that flower stalk is what's essential.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Mike, good luck to you. Thanks very much. And on to Ken in Elkhorn. Hi, Ken.
Yes, hello. I have a question on aeration, overseeding, and I believe they call it slit seeding.
Yes.
And the reason I got the question on that is my front lawn is getting kind of sparse, and I think over the years it's probably just got compacted, and it only has a few inches of really good soil on it, and underneath that a lot of sand. What sequence do I go in, and can I just as simple as throw extra seed on and throw some black dirt over it?
Well, I would probably look at the aeration as your first step. If you're suspecting it's compacted, it probably is.
Mm-hmm.
You can usually rent an aerator from some of the rental stores in your area. You want one that's going to pull out a core, not one that just pokes a hole. You want it to take out a core so you get some soil that's popping out. After you've gone through and did the aeration, and then come back through and then seed or overseed with one of your lawn seeds. Mm-hmm. And then if you have something you can drag behind your lawn tractor to just kind of break up those little pieces of soil that you pulled out, and this will kind of help put it back, cover up some of the seed that you've just planted there. Zit seeding is something that you can do. It's probably the most get your most bang for your buck with that one. You can rent your zip seeders. What you're doing is actually cutting a small furrow and dropping the seeds into that furrow, and so you're ensuring that they're covered by soil. And so what you're doing is probably getting better seed germination. But aeration would be number one. You'll find that if you aerate your soil, and I would do it now in the spring and once in the fall, that it'll really bring things around.
Is it advantageous to add maybe even a half inch or an inch of good topsoil too?
Well, I'd look at adding some organic material, organic matter, because what you're doing is, and you don't need that much, just a light dusting over the soil, kind of just spreading, because you don't want to cover it up to the point where the turf grass that is there will not be able to grow up through whatever you've applied. So,
can you define organic material? Are you just
compost?
Compost, okay.
And if you go to some of your local, you can buy it.
Okay.
Yeah, some of the soil producers will have some compost material. Some of the municipalities have composting units, and they'll sell the product.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck to you, Ken. Appreciate hearing from you. And let's try George in Racine. Hi, George.
Hello. Fellas,
yes.
My question is, I use my grass clippings in my garden, and I was just curious about, how long I should have to wait to, because I do all the fertilizing and all that with the weed killer and that sort of thing. Is it advisable to do that, or should I wait a certain period of time before I actually utilize the grass? Any suggestions would be great.
Well, the fertilizing issue isn't problematic as the herbicides that you use. And usually if you're applying a herbicide, they recommend waiting about 2 or 3 weeks after the application before you start taking those grass clippings. It depends on the product you use. Some of the materials that prevent crabgrass from developing, what they're doing is actually preventing seed germination, so you can have some impact. Another thing that you might want to consider doing is just composting lawn clippings and then applying the compost the following year.
So it's really wouldn't be a problem at that point?
No.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Good luck to you, George. Thanks very much for the call. And Diane is next in Richland Center.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, down our driveway, we have a bunch of tall pine trees, and they were trimmed back. So now the ground underneath is going to get a fair amount of sunshine. What, if anything, can I grow there, like flowers or hostas or what? And do I have to do anything to the ground first?
Are there still pine needles there?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things, pines tend to have very shallow roots, or a lot of fine roots near the surface, and you can grow hostas. I've seen that. I've seen people put in, like, impatience and things like that. One thing that you're going to have to do if you do those is have a regular watering program for them, because the fine fibrous roots of those pines are going to steal the water away from those plants, and they're going to look very raggy and grow very poorly. I've seen some, there's a video growing plants in the shade. It's by the University of Minnesota, Mary Myers, and she talks about that exact problem that you have.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Diane. Appreciate hearing from you. The number for you to get your question or comment in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Andy's next in Dale. Hi, Andy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick, another pine tree question.
Mm-hmm.
I put in white pines probably, maybe 100, 150 from seedlings, and every once in a while, I've got maybe a 2 foot or 3 foot pine that's been, a few years old, and it'll just all turn brown. Or on some of my pine trees, there'll be little tufts of needles that have turned brown, and I just want to know if there's any reason for that or anything that you can think of.
Where are you located?
I am Dale, up near Appleton, Wisconsin.
Okay. In some of the sandier areas, we've seen that, but that has to do with drought.
Okay.
What you might want to do is there are there are some diseases that could possibly, if there were seedlings, just native seedlings, sometimes there's a certain percentage that are prone to diseases. If you have one that dies, I would take it into your county extension office and have it sent down to the pathology lab. They can give you a little closer diagnosis.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Andy. We appreciate your call. Bob, let me ask you this. Some people are, of course, anxious to get into the garden, start planting some vegetables. When and which vegetables can be planted early in the growing season?
Okay, we're looking early. First of all, getting out and working the soil, it sounds like, you know, yesterday might have been a good day to do it. Now it's going to be too wet again. And when you're not digging up big clods of soil, then you can probably get in there after a couple of days without rain. Okay, what varieties? Some of the leafier type of vegetables, the cold crops, which would be the broccoli and the cauliflower and cabbages, radishes, and spinach are two, and onions are three that you can plant very early. They're frost tolerant, and so that you can get those into the garden. Those that tend to produce fruit, and that would be such things as the tomatoes and peppers. We want to wait till we're past frost, and that here in this southern Wisconsin, we're probably looking mid-May, and northern Wisconsin, we're looking at the end of May. So, yeah, I was in Hancock day before yesterday. They were planting potatoes already in that sand.
Hmm. That's right, because they have a sandy soil that's able to take it and
it dries out very fast.
Dries out quickly.
It rains in the morning, you plant in the afternoon.
Leslie in Tomahawk, let's get you into the conversation. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have another pine tree question. I hear a lot of conflicting advice as to whether you can use pine needles as mulch. Some people say, yes, it's fine. Other people say, no, don't ever use it. So I'm just wondering what you think about that.
And what are you using it around?
I'm using it around some perennials, and I don't put it on thick. I put it on maybe about an inch, and my shrubs.
Yeah. Shrubs, there's, you know, no problem. Sometimes with some of the perennials that like a more alkaline type of soil, and usually the pine needles tend to be more acid, sometimes you'll have some problems there. But pine needles will work very good.
They will.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. And Leslie in Waukesha is next. Hello, Leslie.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I'm inquiring about the hydrangea shrubs, like the endless summer.
Yes.
The branching left from last year is real dead looking. But I see a little few sprouts down like near the crown.
Yes.
What will happen there?
It's going to grow you a new plant. Some of those, some of the hydrangeas aren't quite as hardy as we thought they were in terms of the above ground portion, and some will die back all the way to the ground. Dr. Laura Jolly, she knows the different varieties of hydrangeas. She works with them all the time, but just giving you a quick thumbnail is that new growth that you see is going to produce you a new plant to which will flower, and so it'll come back around. The dead stuff, just prune it away.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, how quickly will that?
You should get lucky. You should have flowers this year again.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Leslie. That sounds good. And let's go to Lisa in Kenosha next. Hello, Lisa.
Yes, thank you. And actually, piggybacking on what you just said about hydrangeas, I planted a bluebird lace top, or lace cap, I guess, hydrangea a couple fall back. And I really just have been trying to determine if I should prune that. And when I should do that, and you just said I should, however, I'm not quite sure how much of that I should be pruning because now I'm starting to see some buds and I don't want to take too much of the growth off.
So yours is a small tree statured hydrangea?
Yes, it's just a, yes, exactly. It's
right.
A little tiny shrub-like type thing.
Right. With the hydrangeas, the flower bud initiations happens with the new growth in the spring. It's not, whereas with some other trees, usually you figure any plants that bloom before July 15th probably had flower bud initiation the previous season, so you're cutting off flower buds. Those that blossom after the mid-July usually initiate their flower buds now in the spring. So if you're going to do some pruning, you know, have a reason for pruning. Are there branches
right.
that are in the way, or are they too thick and you want to thin those out, then make your decisions.
Okay. But in general, I guess my overarching question is how best do I nurture this plant to just maximize the blooming? Pruning won't.
Pruning won't do it all. You need to have a good watering program, full sunlight, and even look at fertilizer application very early in the spring for that plant. There's a bulletin on fertilizing trees and shrubs. You might get some information off of that.
All right, very good. Thank
okay,
you.
Lisa, thanks very much for the call. And we're on to Sue in Gays Mills. Hi, Sue.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I was wondering, I have a large piece of property, and I want to not mow the whole thing anymore. And I found online a product called No Mow Grass.
Yeah.
And it said it's a mixture of fescue and rye, and then you overseed, and then it grows maybe to about a foot, but it lays down. Have you ever heard anything about this?
Yep. What it is, all grasses, even the grass that you have there, if you don't mow it, it's only going to get so tall. Like the Kentucky bluegrasses will probably get to a height of about 8-10 inches, and then it just stops growing. It just doesn't look as quite nicely manicured. So the no mows are usually some of the fescues that have been developed, and they only reach a certain height, and then they just stop growing. It's like an old cattle pasture, or, you know, which once was grazed, and when you stop grazing it, the grasses only get so tall. And most of them reach a height of about 10 inches, and they're done.
Oh, okay. So even what I have out there, you know, if
just stop growing it. Just stop mowing.
Stop mowing, it'll stop growing.
Well, it'll grow to a certain height and then stops. It reaches a mature height.
It won't lay over flat like the no-mo type.
Well, it will.
Eventually it will.
Yes. Something to consider is some people go in and plug native wildflowers into something like that. And because when we talk about prairie plantings, they're about 80% or more grasses and just individual flowering plants. And what you do is buy what are called plugs, and these are usually potted plants that are in about 4-inch pots. And it's just a matter of plugging them into that lawn area, and you now have a prairie mix.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks
for
your help.
All right, Sue. Thanks very much.
See, she had less work to not mow, and now we've given her more work to start planting.
Nolan in Berlin is next. Hi, Nolan.
Hi. My question is, I have a large maple tree in my front yard, you know, in that little spot from the sidewalk to the street that's city-owned, and the roots have completely inundated my front yard.
Yep.
And I was wondering what I could do about that, because it's the grass is really sparse, and you can't dig anywhere because it's so thick of roots.
Yeah. Well, you got a decision to make. Usually with maples, they're very shallow rooted, and certain types of maples will really spread out and cause a problem. Part of it has to do with the shading. Probably the reason no grass is growing in a lot of the areas is that there's so much shade that the grass can't grow. You need about 6 hours of light. So looking at thinning out some of the branches, if it's on your own property, to allow some of the sunlight down into the lawn area, it'll probably help them grow. Most people think, well, I'll just add fertilizer and I'll add some water. All you're doing is fertilizing that
tree.
So it grows more roots in that area.
Yeah. I think because of the roots, my soil has almost no topsoil on it now. It's very, very thin.
Well, what's happened is your turf grass has stopped growing.
Okay.
There, your topsoil isn't any thinner.
Right.
It's still there. You just aren't. It's so shaded that nothing wants to grow there.
Oh, okay. All right. Would it help if I added some more soil to the top of that, or would that kill out the tree?
Well, you can usually add more soil. You know, some people add soil, and you're okay for a couple of years, and then the roots grow into that zone. You're back to where you were.
Oh, all right. Well, trim away it is then.
Okay. Nolan, thanks very much, and good luck to you. Let's try Steve in Green Bay next. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Good show.
Thank you.
I've got a couple of burning bushes, or the rabbits really got after them this past winter.
Yeah.
The barks are gone, and anything I can do at this point to kind of save those bushes?
As I suggested earlier in the show, is to when you have trees, and they like burning bush. It's a fast-growing plant, and it's in the rose family, and they like it. Prune back to below wherever that girdling has occurred, and it'll send up some new shoots, and which will be red, and that's the main reason we're probably they'll be red this fall. It's the main reason we grow burning bush. So prune them back, place the plant on a good fertilizing and watering schedule, and it'll come back around.
I'd probably have the bushes 4 feet high. I would, if I prune back to the where the girdling starts, I'd have about a 4-inch stem.
That's where you start.
So your choice now is to either start culturing a new plant, or you go down and purchase one at a local garden center or nursery, and that's maybe a 2 or 3 footer, and then go from there.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right, Steve. Thanks very much for the call. Let's try Rosie in Marinette. Hello, Rosie.
Hi there. I have a question about establishing blueberry bushes around the foundation of my house, which is kind of almost sort of not so new anymore, but it's still very sandy from the construction, but I never bothered to amend the soil or anything. And I'm under the impression, and I don't know if that's correct, that blueberries tend to flourish more in sandier soil.
Well, they'll flourish in if there's plenty of moisture available. Here's a couple of thoughts. It would help you to add organic matter to that soil in the form of compost or old bark chips or something like that. When you plant your blueberries, plant them where the drip line, it's where the drip water comes off the roof, just on the outside of that about a foot. You don't want to plant them in that because they'll drown. But when you do that, that'll also help because blueberries need to be watered about every 5 days. They have a very poor root system. And then the last thing is I would put about 4 inches of mulch over it once you've got the blueberries planted. And then keep the blueberries on a good watering schedule about every 5 days, unless you get plenty of rain. And I guess you're set to go. And if you fertilize, use something like ammonium sulfate. The sulfur will help keep the pH low, and the ammonium provides the nitrogen for the plants.
Okay, ammonium sulfate, you said.
Yes, and if you go, there's a bulletin on growing blueberries in Minnesota, but the plants can't tell which state they're growing in. Wisconsin, I don't believe, has a blueberry bulletin right now, but there are some literature out there if you do a little searching.
Okay.
So if you go to University of Minnesota Extension,
they have a bulletin on growing blueberries.
You'll be able to find that
bulletin. And
they'll
have some suggestions there. That's more for commercial than a homeowner, but you can still seek out the information that you want.
Rosie, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. And let's go to Rich in Madison. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Yeah, I have a small asparagus patch that has a lot of grass in it. It's almost like grass you have in your lawn. Wondering what I can do in the spring to help the asparagus grow or keep that grass down, or just some basic tips for asparagus in the spring.
Yeah, grasses can take over an asparagus bed. A few choices that you can do is mow the grass very close, and then what you do is I would add probably about an inch of compost, and then take newspaper and put it over, between the plants, and then just leaving a small hole where your crown of your asparagus comes up, and then add another 3 inches of mulch material, and that'll kind of keep the weeds out, keep the grasses out of there, and the asparagus is strong enough to push their way up through that little holes that you've left.
Okay, great.
All right. Question for you. We're planning on canning and freezing beans and broccoli for a family of four. How many feet of row do I need to plant to have enough to preserve for the year?
Well, we had bulletin about that at one time. We would say how many feet of row, and I think it was something like about 30 feet per person. So you're talking about 120 feet. But since some of those bulletins came out, the productivity per square or linear foot tends to continue. But you probably need about 30 feet of row per person. And another way to calculate back is about how much will you consume in a year. That would be one way. If you freeze, are you going to consume 2 pounds a week or something like that? And once you've got that canned or frozen, then you supply the neighborhood. Or move it onto a food pantry. A lot of food pantries are taking fresh produce, or soup kitchens in particular. There's a lot of people that volunteer or grow, from their extra produce into that arena. But you're looking at a fair substantial amount if you want to look at 1 year's supply.
Bob, thanks very much. Time has flown, and we look forward to your next visit.
Oh, be back again.
Bob Tomisch, Senior Lecturer in the Department of Horticulture, UW-Madison and Extension. And again, the address for people who would like to get some of those extension bulletins, if you go online, learningstore.uwex.edu, or you can go to your county extension office where they have them there as well. Our thanks to Keisha Mabra for on-air phone production today. Coming up on Monday, we'll be talking about lead mining towns of southwest Wisconsin and astronomy.